Okay, all right. You made your point.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 7, Young Doctors in Heat. Don't like that. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
I remember when I was a kid and there used to be Super Channel, like Free Weekends, which was the Canadian equivalent of HBO when I was a kid. There was a movie called Young Doctors in Love that I think is a Gary Marshall movie. It's like spoofy. It's like sort of spoofy of hospital soaps. And the reason that I remember it is because there was nudity. And it was like one of those things where like the kid telegraph, like everyone told everyone else, like, you gotta watch that movie. There's boobs. Why I cared about seeing boobs when I was in like grade 3, who fucking knows? But that's the only reason that I remember that title and why I know it's the reference for this one.
The episode titles have calmed down a little bit, at least since like season 2 and 3, but there's one coming up in a couple weeks that's a real barker. So yeah, we'll talk about that then.
We will talk about Young Doctors in Heat in a moment, but first we want to tell you that Again With This is coming to episode 93, coming to the Patreon on April 22nd. Let's watch Lindsay Price in Kitchen Confidential. Did you know they made a sitcom out of Anthony Bourdain's memoir, Kitchen Confidential? They did, for a hot second. And by a hot second, I mean 3 episodes, then it was baseball, then it was yanked, and then they aired one more. And then they canceled it. That all went down in 2005. Good times. We'll link the episode in the show notes. It used to be on Hulu for a while. It is not anymore, but it is still, fortunately, on Dailymotion. So you can find it there, and you can find all our past episodes at patreon.com/againwiththis. Now our C-plot. Matt decides to prioritize his peen ahead of his sobriety. I mean, I guess they're tied. It's hard to say. But we open this plot line, such as it is, at Dr. Dan's rehab center. Matt rudely walking in late to a group session. Dan's just wrapping up. Matt feebly claims he got caught up in rounds. So Dr. Dan notes, he put himself out to help Matt, and this is a shitty way of showing his gratitude. Also, blowing off his commitments is a bad way to stay sober, and that if Matt doesn't take his recovery seriously, he could end up dead. I mean, harsh but true.
Yeah. He also is wearing the worst shirt. It is like the most shapeless. It's like a ring pull 70s situation. It is not good. Like, if I looked at that shirt, I'd be like, are you on drugs again? Like, he just... Yeah, it's not okay. You can smell it through the screen. It's not good.
So Matt vaguely promises to do better, but Dan pins him down for an appointment the next day. And at said appointment, Matt and another bad shirt, this one an elbow-length short-sleeved blouse you can see in the visual aids, joke about how hard it is to imagine Dan dealing with his own addiction. Dan basically blames his substance issues on an overbearing father. Matt's sorry to have pried, but Dan wants Matt to know as much about him as he knows about Matt. Not sure that's how a therapeutic relationship is supposed to work, by the way. But
yeah,
Matt is also picking up a vibe because after confirming that Dan can't fuck his patients, Matt fires him and declares his attraction. And we cut away before Dan can tell him this is possibly just another way for Matt to delay dealing with his own shit. I mean, I'm not an expert. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Also, there is a lot that's being elided here, even for a Matt plot line. Like, I mean, Evigan is not the most nuanced performer. That's not why he was hired, and that is fine. But there's like a lot that's being assumed on both sides of the ball, as it were. So,
yeah.
But also, no one cares because, like, just find an off ramp for this poor man and free him.
Yes. I mean, it's clear you don't want to dig in on his issues much. Like, they've served their plot purpose, and so you're not dealing with the aftermath, which, like, fine. But it also seems like, yeah, as it were, they're skipping a lot of steps.
Yeah.
On to the B plot. Jane can't stop fucking things up for Jake and Allison, and Sydney's love life is almost as complicated. First, let's check in on the sub music. Clip 2. This is, first of all, perfect for Rhonda's cardio funk class. It's too bad that she's gone.
I was just going to say.
And second, this is a wildly shameless ripoff of clip 3. Not always that obvious, but it's you're coming alive from It's a Beautiful Life. It's really very one-to-one.
I mean, was that there originally? Because it seems like it might have been.
Doesn't say, but it definitely, It's a Beautiful Life is from 95, so it predates this episode at least. Anyway, this takes us into the episode proper as Jake passes Allison on his way out the door. This is also where we see the episode was directed by good old Anson Williams, Potsy himself. And no sooner has Jake rounded the corner than he sees that Jane's lying in wait for him by the mailboxes, ordering him to stay away from her or she'll call the cops. And Grant's show kind of overplays Jake's performance of innocence, considering he is innocent, meekly saying he's just trying to get to work. And Allison joins him to say they're all friends. That's what Jane thought, too. And then they did this to her, and she flounces out. Allison tells Jake she can't live like this. He claims he'll take care of it. There's, by the way, no talk of Allison trying to find another place. Like, I guess that's just off the table, and they live together now.
Yeah.
Which, fine. That's probably what you should have done in the first place.
Yeah. This did not need to take 7 episodes to be handled, but I guess that's where the show is with shit now. Everything takes a gazillion years, and by the time we actually get to where they should have been 3 episodes ago, nobody cares anymore, but here we all are. Ooh.
And to be clear, I'm not saying they should have lived together after 2 weeks of dating in secret, because I'm not crazy. I mean, for plot exigency purposes, like, you know, if you needed her to be with him or whatever, you know what I mean?
I do.
I am not endorsing the dating habits of Melrose Place residents. I hope that goes without saying.
It certainly does for me.
Sydney's on her way to work when Kyle waylays her. Everyone loves Samuel Kirov's paintings, especially the 5 new ones he did. And could Sydney put together a bio for him that other potential buyers could review? When Sydney agrees, she slips into a soft-focused daydream in which Kyle declares his love for her and carries her into his place to bone. And then we realize he's been standing there this whole time because he's like, are you okay? Like, not to be rude, but him, I don't see it.
I do, but more for me.
He just doesn't seem like her type. I think it's more that.
Yeah, that's true.
Not just because he's married. I just...
He's, you know, like, too nice, actually.
Yeah. Yes, there's no edge to him that we've seen. Apparently, Jake's big plan on Jane is to go through Sydney, because when we next see Jake, he is at lunch with her. She's nervous that Jane might spot them at a restaurant so close to the store. Also, isn't he too close to Jane, given the restraining order? Jake claims they're fine. Plus, Sydney picked the restaurant, he reminds her. Which is when Kyle comes out from the back, so we know they are, in fact, at Kyle's. And after pleasantries, Kyle tries again to define himself as a character, like, at all. Clip 4.
Jake, this man is a culinary genius.
No, no genius. I just can't get along in an office, hate to wear a tie, and ever since the Marines, I can't take orders from anybody.
Do you also fix your bike by the pool? Because we already have one of you.
Right. Except that Jake, as far as we know, was never in the service.
That's true.
But Kyle is ex-military. Got it? Once he's gone, Jake says he wanted to talk about Jane. And Sydney recaps what we know about recent events in Jane's life. Given her trauma, of course, she is behaving in an antisocial way. Jake wants to get things out in the open, but Sydney says that if he talks to Jane, he'll open a Pandora's box. Jane is fragile. Jake doesn't want to be responsible for breaking her. And if he stays away from Jane, the situation will resolve itself. Which is not bad advice, honestly. Except that Jane is the one who's aggressing, but, you know, one of them should move, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for real life, yeah, it's pretty good advice. For this particular soap opera, probably not workable, but good job, Sid, and a question mark?
Right. So then Allison's waking Jake up very early in the morning to say she can't sleep. They have to do something about Jane. And Jake, who works nights, crabs that he already told Allison it's working itself out. A very tiresome conversation rehashing what Jake already discussed with Sydney ensues. Allison isn't comfortable waiting until it's too late, and Jake says it's never going to get that far. Which, too late for what? How far? Like, what is either of them fearing? Jane is going to kill them? Jane's going to kill herself? Like, I don't know what they're talking around here.
Yeah. Also, there's a restraining order in place. Like, what do you propose to do? You talked to Sydney. She told you what she thinks you should do. There's something else to do.
Yeah. I mean, God forbid Jane get some explosives and try to blow up their apartment complex. Oh, wait. That already happened and they still live there. So,
yeah.
At the store later, Sydney complains to Sam about how long it's been since she went on a date. And Sam suddenly remembers the friend of an ex-boyfriend who is cute, rich, and single. Sydney decides to take a flyer. That night, Allison glares at the ringing phone, and then clip five.
Hello. Damn it, Jane, I know it's you. Would you just say something? That was the fifth call in 10 minutes.
I told you it was probably just a wrong number.
Yeah, and if we went over to Jane's apartment right now, I bet we'd find her on the phone.
I can't go anywhere near that place, you know that.
You just will not take me seriously, will you? You seem much more concerned about her problems. It's for you.
This seems like she's de-escalating, frankly. It's just annoying. It's not actively hostile.
Yeah. Also, ask your grandparents, but turn the ringer off.
Yeah.
Take it off the hook.
Yeah, you're not so important that you can't stand to miss a few legitimate calls that might be trying to get through, so.
Yeah, you already live with your boss, so.
Right, yeah.
And your former boss.
As a frustrated Jake stalks out, Allison follows, calling his name, and then goes over to Jane's window, where Jane smirks at her before snapping the blinds shut. And the next day, Allison stomps into Jane's to accuse her of slashing Allison's tires and calling Jake's nonstop. Jane ignores Allison in favor of letting us know she's losing it in all areas of her life. Clip six.
Sam?
Yeah.
I'll just be a second. You know those sleeveless blouses that you marked down to 30%? Well, I've changed my mind. They're much too beautiful to give away. Can you put them back to full price?
Really? Okay. Okay, you're the boss.
Jane is so annoying.
Oh my God, she's so annoying. And I just don't, like, every single person in this complex that Samantha interacts with is being demented or rude.
Yes.
I've given up trying to figure out why she's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Too many people.
Yeah. It is too many people. It's too many. Some of the old guard gotta leave. I know that's happening at the end of the season, but, like, I mean, that's 5,000 weeks from now, but I guess we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
So then Jane turns back to Allison to say she's mad about what Allison stole from her. Allison gently says that she and Jake both tried with Jane, but now Jane has to let this go. And Jane snits that not everyone is as callous as Allison and orders her out. And that night, Sydney prays her blind date isn't a dork before opening the door to a soap handsome blonde dude. You can see in the visual aids, I don't know how else to describe him, honestly. I feel like that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, very bland. Soups. He does seem to have been carved out of soap or a potato. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
he's real
generic.
Genitals, certainly.
Well, so his name is Ben. And then Billy confirms that Ben is also rich, as Sam promised, by yelling up to Sydney about the Maserati that has blocked him in. And we rejoin Sydney and Ben as he's walking her back to her door. He's amazed at how alike they are. And she didn't think there were any guys like him left in the world. And she invites him in, opening a bottle of wine while he goes to the can. And when she hears the door open, she asks if he's ready. And he's like, the question is, are you ready? And when she comes around the corner, she sees that he's naked, except for his chain, which you can see in the visual aids. It's really a choice. Like, why? Why the chain? It's so... When she darts away, he doesn't get what's wrong. He felt this great connection, and she orders him out. He ignores her until she threatens him with a spatula. But when he grabs a pillow to hide his shame, she runs after him to try to get the pillow back, which is very funny, and ends up standing next to Kyle and the flowers that he has brought home for Taylor. And they joke a little about the awkward situation's aftermath, Sydney commenting that married people don't know how good they have it. But before she can return to her place, he stops her with a touch, not grab, of her arm, and gives the flowers to her because he thinks she needs them more than Taylor does. And the right guy for Sydney's probably right under her nose, which I hope not, because he would be very short if that were the case. But just by the way, before we move on, we also see in the shot when Ben is standing there naked with a chain that there is another door to a bedroom in this version of Sydney's apartment. So I still don't know why she's handing random clothes on the shelves in the living room. No one cares about this but me. The next day at Jane's, we rejoin Sydney and Sam just after Sydney has finished telling Sam the story. Clip 7.
Oh, he seemed so nice.
Yeah, well, so did Ted Bundy.
I had to clip that for you.
I mean, true.
She's already the queen of your heart, Sydney. Mm-hmm. You do not have to keep closing with Sarah.
It's true. It's true.
Anyway.
Take the W.
Sydney only blames herself since she should have known not to listen to Sam, who sort of quietly scoffs at this insult but doesn't engage because I guess she's just decided this is what her life is now. Sydney has also decided that if a guy is single, there's a reason, and Sam jokes about whether Sydney's going to date married men instead then. But no, Sydney's not going to date at all. If she can't have the man she wants, there's no point settling for less. And obviously Sam wants to know who that is, and of course, Sydney does not tell her. Then we're at Shooters, hearing about another pivotal-sounding scene that totally happened off-screen, clip 8.
You called the cops.
Yes, I did.
They were in here, asking questions about Jane.
What'd you tell them?
Well, that I couldn't believe anything better to do with their time.
Two beers, please.
You knew how I wanted to handle this, and you deliberately went behind my back.
I had to do something. I don't feel safe, even in my own apartment.
Unbelievable.
Jake, I went to see Jane in the dress shop. She is obsessed with you beyond any kind of reason.
I know, okay? That night in the alley, when I heard the footsteps, I went back and I found her. It was Jane. I confronted her and she made it clear to me that she still had feelings. Intense feelings.
Why didn't you tell me?
This is about me. It's my problem.
No, it's our problem. Look what this is doing to us.
Would you let me handle this, okay?
I'm not calling off the cops, if that's what you mean.
Are you working tonight or not?
No, you work. I'm taking a sick day.
This relationship seems great.
Yeah.
Like, really seems you're both having fun.
Yeah. The way this is being approached is just asinine. But again, it's a too many characters problem.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And I assume the reason that we didn't see Allison going to the cops is so that we couldn't get the detective being like, this seems like a personal problem that does not require police intervention. Also, there's already a restraining order on the books. Like, work your shit out. This isn't up to us.
Also, call the phone company.
Yeah, change your number.
YP, not an OP.
Exactly. Anyway, so Billy watches Allison walk out and then brings his and Sam's beers over to the table where she's waiting. And he bitchily comments that it sounds like trouble in paradise, and she mildly accuses him of enjoying it. The face he makes at this is truly indescribable, so you're just going to have to go to the visual aids and see what wrong face he is making now. But he denies it. She thanks him for the drink and leaves, and he stops her to say, okay, he smiled, but what's the big deal? She thought Billy was available, but Sydney's right. If a guy's single, there's a reason. And as she leaves, he looks after her darkly, which again, like, Sydney, listen to your Maryland mother. Stay away from this man forever. He's bad news. Speaking of Sydney, when we see her next, she's at Kyle's on their busiest night ever, and Taylor's MIA, and the wait staff is out of control. Sydney volunteers to take over for Taylor. We'll find out where she is in the A-plot. Hey, here's that A-plot. Amanda, Peter, Michael, Kimberly, Megan, and Taylor are one big romantic rat king. Amanda purposely makes a racket in the kitchen to induce Peter to get out of bed to yell at her so that she can yell at him for being lazy. He bitches back that he's broke and barely employed and that his wife won't spend his copious free time with him, but clip 9.
Well, the Peter I know would stop at nothing to get what he wanted.
Yeah, including trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, how motivated do you actually want this guy to be? Is A. B, this is just sort of a systemic problem with this season, which is, I mean, aside from there being too many characters, like everybody's plots are so slow, and the motivations for various conflicts are not believable, even for a soap opera. Like, I feel like they've been having some variation on this fight for like a month.
Yeah.
Like, wrap it up or move the chess pieces. Who cares? It's, I mean, I don't know exactly what happened, but like, this influx of new characters plus season five-iness is just not, it's not working for me. At all. These episodes are so boring.
Yeah, they are a slog, I agree. Especially this plot. Like, I we know that Amanda's materialistic, but I don't know why she's on this hobby horse other than for there to be some kind of conflict between them that is not about Taylor. Anyway, Peter whines back that bad word of mouth is killing his practice. Amanda doesn't know why he isn't doing anything about it. And a sideswipe about the time he spends at Kyle's gets them back to him bitching about Amanda spending too little time with him. For various very obvious plot reasons, she then steers them into dangerous territory, clip 10.
Oh, unlike your first wife, your sacred Beth.
Don't.
I bet you remember every precious moment with her. I bet life with her was just idyllic. That was a real marriage, not the sham this one is.
Oh, so you finally let it out, huh? You think this marriage is a sham?
No, you do. You just don't have the courage to say it.
That's the other thing. Every time we see them together, like in any romantic setting, we know it's not a sham. These two have too much chemistry.
Yeah, that's another problem. Like, you could just put a pin in this and focus on the work issues with Craig, but then sometimes that's off screen for like three quarters of an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too many people. Kill someone off.
Please.
They'll get to it.
Michael, very chipper since, as we know, he is freshly fucked, greets Kimberly with breakfast in bed to let her know how much he appreciates her. He also cleaned the bathrooms and finished the laundry. Celibacy has given him so much energy. All his jogging. As he heads out to work, Kimberly says she loves him, and he's like, love you too, babe. So she's like, no, I really love you. And he responds with a hilarious, awkward smile you can see in the visual aids before sidling out guiltily. Cut to Amanda driving to the office and picking up her cellular phone to a call from Peter. He thinks she's right. Maybe this isn't working. There's a bunch of business about how bad the connection is that doesn't actually affect the conversation at all, but he needs a few days to think, so he's going to stay with Michael and Kimberly in their one-bedroom house. Get a hotel, you deadbeat! But Amanda tells Peter to do what he needs to and hangs up on him and then pulls over, hoping he's going to call her back. While at the apartment, Peter waits for her to call him, but then leaves like seconds later. So I don't know why that happened. So where Michael went was the blonde's place. I guess now we can just say the character Kelly Rutherford is playing is named Megan. He's got a bag of groceries and said he didn't recognize her with her clothes on. And by the way, and you can see this in the visual aids too, this is very much the slip dress era. So what she's wearing barely qualifies as clothes. Like, it's very diaphanous and it's daytime. Like, it's a lot.
We're also transitioning from all the ladies have a bump hairstyle to all the ladies have a deep side part that is held in place with a very tiny kid's barrette or similar. It's a lot. Apparently, it's coming back, too. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Megan is unhappily surprised by his offer to make them breakfast as she backs away from him, reminding him of their ground rules, just sex. He wants to get to know her better, but they're not dating or friends. They just fuck. I'm paraphrasing, but not much. And then she backs her BMW out of the driveway and leaves him there with his groceries and also his dick in his hand, metaphorically. And in the very next scene, Michael's at the office, loudly asking a just-arrived Kimberly how it went with her shrink, even though the new office assistant is at the desk and doesn't need to know about Kimberly's private issues. But she gushes that it was great and now thinks her problem is exhaustion and stress, so she made an appointment for a physical. No matter what it is, Michael's there for her. And they're kissing when Peter loudly clears his throat, and when they detach to look at him, he indicates his suitcase in his hand and cracks, and they said it wouldn't last. Okay. I realize why he's holding it, but, like, why would you bring your suitcase up to the office instead of leaving it in your car, you weirdo? Like, did you get here on the bus? What are you doing? Anyway, he tells them about taking time away from Amanda and announces that he will be staying with them, which is not how you ask for a favor, Peter.
No. No.
Again, one-bedroom house. We know that Michael and Kimberly aren't having sex in it, but he doesn't.
No.
It's rude in either case. That night, Peter's at the bar at Kyle's, ordering a Welsh scotch. Pretty sure if it's not from Scotland, it's whiskey, alleged man. Am I wrong?
I think that's correct.
Okay. Instead, Kyle offers McBride scotch from his ancestral lands in the County McBride in Scotland. And Peter toasts to friendship. And in case we forgot about the most recent reference to Kyle's military service, he replies with a Semper Fi. We fucking get it. When Peter orders another, Taylor, who passed on the scotch because it's a guy's drink, comments that he looks like he's on his way to another midnight swim. He says that'll be in the ocean and why. And Taylor asks what happened, but just then Kyle sees Amanda walking in behind Peter and steers a very reluctant Taylor into the kitchen to get out of their business for once. And the newlyweds reconnect in clip 11.
Sit down and have a drink. It's from County McBride.
Any excuse, right, Peter?
Absolutely. And on the heels of that little zinger, I think I'll have another.
I didn't know you were serious about moving out.
Just for a few days. We'll experiment to see if I can still dress myself.
You know, I hate telephones and fighting on them, especially cellulars.
Really? I didn't know that. Now, there are a lot of things we don't know about each other, aren't there?
You know, you could have waited until tonight, till we talk things out.
Well, I'm talked out. I mean, I am talked out, tuckered out, and moving out.
Would you stop it? This is not a contest to see which one of us can be the biggest smartass. We're adults. We have to talk things through, work things out.
Was that our vows? I mean, it all happened very quickly.
Come on, Peter. I love you.
She loves me. It's a beautiful tactic.
What more do you want from me?
Well, why don't you try begging?
You know something? I must have you confused with someone else. The man I married wasn't a jerk.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he was.
I would have also, but...
Yeah.
He's a jerk.
I mean, it's fine to marry a jerk, fortunately for me, but someone married me and I'm a jerk. For sure. But I don't know why the point is, like, that now his...
What a
his,
bitch.
I don't know why he's not... I don't know why he's now acting like he... Like, she trapped him into this marriage. Because, like, I mean, yes, it was... there were awkward circumstances surrounding it, but since then, we've seen you be pretty happy and all you wanted all season. And during the Jack era, remember Jack and Bobby? Oh. Remember Bobby? God. All he wanted was to get back together with her. Mm-hmm. And now you have her, so, like, be happy you have her. Try and fix your practice, honestly, or do something else.
I mean, she got you out of jail. Maybe don't be quite so sulky about being married to her already.
Yeah.
Also, she looks like Heather Locklear. Maybe you noticed that part.
Yeah. It's dumb, as you said. The next morning, Megan jogs up to Michael on the beach to enthuse about what a great day it is. He's still stung about their exchange the previous day, and she's basically like, you had incredible sex with no strings attached. Quit bitching. But he still whines that he doesn't know anything about her, so she tries to shut him up by supplying her last name, which is Lewis, and then changing the subject to him. He says he loves his wife, and she's like, great, not my business. I'll be around Friday if you want to fuck again. In the boardroom at D&D, Arthur is up to some more fuckery. Clip 12.
Now, I know that all of you are among the best in the business, and that you've worked very, very hard to make a great team. But as we also know, our dear Amanda has been distracted by a host of personal problems of late, and as a result, a lot of important details slip through the cracks. I want changes around here, ladies and gentlemen. I want results. And I want them right away. Thank you.
Quite a performance, Arthur.
but I will not tolerate being humiliated in front of my staff.
I have a business to run, Amanda.
And for 6 years, I've been right here trying to help you run it.
Yes, of course. I vaguely remember when you used to work here full time. What's the deal, though? Cruise control until your husband gets back on his feet so he can start supporting you?
You leave him the hell out of this.
God, I love it when you talk tough.
I will say, as tiresome as this also is, this is as much business detail as I want them to try to supply. Like, it's very vague. It's like she's dropping the ball. We don't have to hear what ball it is or how or, like, what he demands. Just, like, shit's not going right. Great.
Yeah.
Got it.
Thank you. And also, we don't have to deal with Billy, like, ostensibly being the best at whatever business it is this week. So right. Leave it out.
Until he's the worst, which he needed to be for plot reasons, which is, you know, more credible.
Right.
But Amanda, please, either sue this man or start looking for another job because this can't stand. You can't work under these circumstances.
Yeah. No.
When she comes out of the meeting, she runs into Craig, who has her briefcase and coffee and the news that she has a pitch to Worldview Telecom the next morning in San Francisco with Craig. And then Peter's there. She tells him what's going on and promises to call that night, leaving Peter to toss the roses he bought in the trash. Oh, no. And then Amanda and Craig are in a hotel bar in San Francisco, Craig boringly lecturing Amanda about the pitch until she tells him to shut up. She knows he and his dad are up to some shit, so right now she's going to go call her husband since that's the only relationship in her life worth salvaging. But when she calls the beach house, Michael picks up. Goes out to see that the fold-out bed is empty, and he covers that Peter couldn't sleep, so Michael gave him some pills that knocked him out. Amanda asks if he can't just wake Peter up, and Michael claims he's dead asleep. Peter is, of course, with the McBrides, wandering back into their apartment, so drunk it takes him a minute to notice that he's not at his own apartment. Taylor starts undressing him, and his fall onto the couch involves him dropping his forearm onto the top of her head in a very nice detail of physical acting you can see in GIF form in the visual aids. She looks like she was not expecting it, and it makes it even funnier. He immediately passes out as she is covering him with a blanket, and she brushes the hair off his forehead and runs her fingertips over his lips and then starts kissing him. He is fully unconscious. This is so gross. But then again, as we know, Taylor is a creep. Clip 13.
Yep.
Oh, Peter, I've missed you so much. So, so much.
Taylor! Are you coming to bed? Taylor!
It's actually upsetting. I was like really grossed out.
Yeah. I mean, strong It's All For You, Damien from The Omen vibes.
Mm-hmm.
She, like, her Manson lamps are... This is so boring. Like, just get to the reveal already.
Yeah.
But she is giving 110%.
She really is committed. Yes. 100%. I agree. Absolutely. So the next day, Amanda strides into Kyle's, ignoring Taylor's greeting, and heads straight to Kyle to ask about renting out the place for a private dinner for just herself and Peter. Taylor breaks in about the prohibitive cost. By the way, this is where we see Taylor is in a beige version of a turtleneck with pointless false pockets on the boobs that Allison was wearing in Olive in a previous scene. You can see them in a side-by-side in the visual aids. Like,
yeah.
Maybe put one episode apart, guys. I know you're shopping for everything at the same Ann Taylor, but Jesus. Anyway, Kyle says they can give Amanda the friend rate. He suggests $1,200, but Taylor thinks it would be more like $2,500. No way is that tiny place, which serves meatloaf, turning over that much business in a night. I'm sorry. That's not.
It's veal meatloaf,
Okay. All right. I take it back. There's like, what, 12 tables? Like, it's so small.
Yeah, if that. Plus the bar.
Plus the bar.
And he's giving away booze, which is the biggest margin item. So, yeah.
Right.
They're terrible at this, but... Restaurant.
Never mind. Amanda doesn't blink at the almost double the price Kyle quoted and adds that private means private. Kyle promises that he and Taylor will leave them in the place and have a party of their own. Taylor's like, oh, great. Amanda chirps that it sounds like it'll work out for everyone and leaves with a smug glance back at Taylor. And that night, Michael and Kimberly are playing Scrabble sitting next to each other. Like, Michael's using the coffee table, but Kimberly has her rack in her hand. That's not how you play Scrabble.
No.
Come on now. Figure out a different way to arrange the scene, dumb director Potsy. Anyway, Kimberly's grateful for Michael and loves that they can be so intimate without touching. He'll always be her best friend. And then Dr. Stein calls. By the way, according to IMDb, this character is Dr. Howard Stein. So close.
And his nurse, Tata Toothy. Got it.
Presumably he is a shock doc. Kimberly tempts fate by asking if he has good news for her. But no, she has cranial pressure in her eye. It's probably nothing, but just in case, he has scheduled her an MRI. She covers for Michael's sake by telling Dr. Stein she's so relieved to hear that, and then lying to Michael that she's fine and that they can rule out any physical cause for her lack of interest in sex. And Michael's like, that's great. I just remembered I have a thing, and takes off to tell Megan he's on his way. Over to Kyle's, where Peter is walking in for his private party. Kyle serves their meals before very quickly departing. Peter notes that Amanda took a chance doing all this since he might not have shown up, but she wanted to find a way to start over. And he's like, I didn't think you liked this place. And she's like, I don't, but I know that you do. And they go on, clip 14.
So you know me pretty well after all, I guess.
At this point, I doubt anyone knows you better, and vice versa.
Why do I suddenly feel like one of your celebrated advertising pitches?
Because no matter how hard you try, there's no way you could say no.
No to what?
To moving back in. Forgetting all this petty nonsense. I can't take another night without you next to me. Please, no sarcasm.
I was just going to say,
thank God. He then gets out of his chair to kneel next to hers to make out with her, which is, I'm sorry, it's cute. They're cute. I'm sorry.
They are adorable. She's very good in the scene. Like, this needs to not be happening. It's just so contrived for the purposes of Sweep's conflict. But then they do a good job with it because they have chemistry and are professionals. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's especially out of the Amanda mode for her to be vulnerable at all. So it's even, you know, she really puts it over. Thank God. Mm-hmm. Over to Megan's place where she and Michael have just concluded some classic under the blanket sex. And he's getting up as she dozes off, but he's not leaving. He's rifling through her drawers to try to figure out what her deal is, finding them suspiciously empty, which I guess explains why what I was complaining about in the previous episode about the place looking like shit. Okay, I guess there's a reason. But anyway, she catches him. Everything he needs to know about her is right here, she says, opening her robe. And apparently Michael finds this convincing because he goes straight over to kiss on her some more. And the next day, it's Kimberly's MRI, which her doctor improbably is on site for as the tech points something out to him. And the doctor says, clip 15.
Oh, my God.
This is what you call an under five making the most of his time. God bless. Yep. God bless Dr. Howard Stein. And then Peter's leaving the hospital that night, so he does still have patience, I guess, when Taylor emerges from the shadows to stare at him creepily and finally tell him what her fucking deal is. Clip 16.
Well, either you're a closet mugger or you're following me.
I had no choice. You've been avoiding me, and we have so much to talk about.
I don't think I understand. You see, Kyle's my friend.
It's not about you and Kyle. It's about you and me. Don't you see, destiny brought us together?
You said you were following me. That's not destiny. That's just weird.
Look at me. Think. Just think back.
You know, all I can think about right now is going home to a nice warm bed and my wife.
Which wife? Amanda or Beth?
What do you know about Beth?
You still don't know who I am, do you? Victoria Davis. Victoria Taylor Davis.
You're Vicky? Beth's sister? Little Vicky?
Yes, that's me, Peter. All grown up.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah, we definitely needed 7 full episodes to get to that big quote reveal.
Yeah. And like, what were you? I mean, we're going to find, spoiler, I guess, we're going to find out that she's been obsessed with him since he was married to Beth. But like, this is before you could have Google alerts. Like, were you just biding your time through life until you happened to see that extremely improbable front page story about Peter's arrest in the Boston, whatever?
The Boston Creeper.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
Anyway, that's her deal, and now we know. It's only going to get more annoying from here, I'm sure. For now, let's close things up with our episode MVP.
Amanda?
Who?
Amanda?
Yeah, I can see a case for that.
Or, I mean, really Heather Locklear, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like everyone is just so boring and frustrating and trapped in contrivances right now that it's hard to find an M.
Yeah, it's true.
Spoiled for choice on L, though.
It's true. I'm going to say the Marines for turning out such great chef in Kyle, apparently. Mm-hmm. My winner of the week. Episode least valuable player.
Taylor.
Arthur, you should be better at this. Why is whatever you're trying to do, Arthur, whatever he's trying to do to Amanda is taking so long and it's just being gross.
Yeah, like, just fire her, dude.
Yeah.
And, if it means that much to you, let her take you to court. Yeah, I'm going to say Taylor because she is creepy and I'm over it.
Yeah, agree.
Next time on Again With This, Jane loses it, but then all better. Taylor is still creepy, but then revelations. Michael goes all cheaty stalker, but then plot twist. You ate lunch, but then our visual aids. Upchuck caution to the winds and check those out for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. Follow the links there to get our very special 90210 book, to follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and to join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm heavy breather Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is my first wife, my sacred Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is not Destiny, he's just David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
We hate you guys.